Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Wednesday hump day, the 15th of February, 2023. Glad to have you along on this midday week here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Mr. Aaron Zommer is on the board, as always, our producer, engineer, and it is Crossover Wednesday. That means the one, the only, the talented Pat Kreitlow from Up North News on the banks of, is it a thawing Lake Wissota, Pat, this morning? Joins us. How are you?
It appears to be. We've had we've been above freezing for over a day here with just steady but light rain all this time, which is just what you want in a proper melt, not too much at any one time. And we're still due for, you know, a 10. Did I hear right? Are you guys forecast for 5 to 10 inches down there?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say they're talking anywhere. 10 is on the high end, but yeah, 6 to 8 at least. Wow. here in Madison, as we take a quick check around the weather across our listening area. This morning, WRCE in Richland Center, it's going to be cloudy and breezy, a high of 41. Tonight, some clouds move in, some rain, a low of 23. And then, yes, Pat, snow tomorrow in Richland Center, only about 4 to 5 inches, looks like in that area. Moving up to Bow Falls Radio in Wausau, a chance of rain and cloudy, a high of 39 today. Mostly cloudy tonight and 17. Tomorrow in Wausau, it's going to be mostly cloudy. No snow at all, as they say, and 22. Yeah, and then up in Amory today, some light snow this morning. Breezy, a high of 34. Temperatures falling tonight, a low of 5. And tomorrow, again, in beautiful Amory, Lake Air Radio, WLAK. Sunny skies in northwest Wisconsin and 19 tomorrow. So that's your forecast.
Yeah, so last week when I was down there, you got, what, about 5-6 inches of that really wet, heavy, slushy stuff, and nothing up here. So, it's a beautiful day. It's been a nice time. I want to say first, though, as the show is beginning.
Yes.
What a good job folks have done with their theme music. You choosing Freedom from George Michael.
Thank you.
I love Kristen Bry's I Hate Myself for Loving You As Goes Wisconsin, because it's so appropriate sometimes. And I, you know, when I started with the 8 to 11 show, I used Crossfire from Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Sure.
Which, again, I think.
Great tune.
It really gets to how we feel sometimes, you know, trapped between all the extremes. It seemed a little heavy for 6 o'clock in the morning. So I've since gone with something else, but you know, never underestimate the power of a good entry song. Every major league batter knows it. You got to have a walk-up song.
A walk-up tune. Yeah. We it's news music. We got it all here at Civic Media. Pat, I want to get your opinion and your thoughts this morning on something that kind of took off yesterday on our show, and Governor Tony Evers coming out with his budget address today, and kind of his take on how all the money should be spent, including the $7 billion surplus the state now has. And one of the items in there was giving or appropriating about $290 million to the baseball district in Milwaukee that leases to the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for the Brewers to stay another 20 years. Had some calls on this. Most people were kind of like, yeah, I love the Brewers. I don't want them to go anywhere, but I'm not so sure we want to give them $290 million. What's your take on this?
My take is I'm in favor of it, but I do throw in this caveat. Much like the old definition of I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it. You could say about corporate blackmail. You know, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. I say this as somebody who grew up in Minnesota and was crushed to watch the Minnesota North Stars leave for Dallas when the owner at the time, Norm Green, basically blackmailed the city and said, give me everything or I'm going to move. We've seen that, in which case you say, vaya con Dios, get out of here. But when done right, it is a healthy piece of economic development. And here's the example I mean. We always talk about the big projects, like was state money going to be used for the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee? Yes, it was. It had to get through the legislature. Why did people like then State Representative Dana Walks from Eau Claire push so hard to support it? Because he reminded his fellow legislators that state funds also helped with so many other venues, what became the Pablo Center in Eau Claire. You know, from the state budget bills, there are plenty of other allocations of state funds. And just because one is especially big, because it's a major league sports team that brings in hundreds of millions of dollars and economic impact, doesn't mean that it's any less worthy of state support. So if you look at it from a purely economic standpoint, and if it appears to be a balanced deal, like I think this one is, it's okay. But if the team is saying, you know, if they're greedy, basically, if they're saying give us a disproportionate share or we'll leave town, fine, leave, don't care. But I think this one works.
Me too. I'm for the points you made, I get that. At the end of the day, if you don't do it, they're going somewhere else. I'm not sure that we want to have no Major League Baseball team in Wisconsin. I mean, what do you want to be, Iowa? I mean, I don't want to be Iowa. So
you don't want to when you're this close to Chicago. You want to have that professional identity. Keep that money in Wisconsin and keep that state pride, frankly.
If you would, please, Pat, on our side of the 8 o'clock hour, share with people a caller that you had that got a little bit of a blowback yesterday. I thought that was a really interesting point we made on your show. The caller that called in about being angry about something you said. I said we have to be careful that we don't attack the people, we attack the party. Because we're talking about the Republican Party and that sort of thing.
Oh well, we did the call. We got a caller on Franklin Graham, right. Who was unhappy that I said some harsh things, and he said, you know, he's done a lot of good, and I said I don't disagree that I've seen some of the feel good commercials, but you can't also be somebody that says, well, Donald Trump is, you know, we need failed people like that to be our leaders. But then you're questioning the Christianity of Barack Obama. And we need to be able to have that disagreement without shouting at each other, but being able to put those points on the table just the same. And that's what we did last week.
Great calls, as always, on Pat's show. You can hear him every week, weekday, Monday through Friday, from 6 a.m. until 8 across the Civic Media Radio Network. I appreciate you, Pat. Thanks for being here, and have a great day in Lake Wasota.
Thank you. You too.
My pleasure. Stay with us. Rick Wilson, the founder of the Lincoln Project, is next. You're on the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 15 past the hour of 8 o'clock here on the Civic Media Radio Network, this 15th day of February 2023, hump day in the middle of the week. Usually on a Wednesday, as we all know, we usually invite in Trigvi Olson, Wisconsin native and senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. However, Trigvi has other obligations, and so he got his own fill-in guest. And I think we should start having him book all of our guests, because he went out and got us a national figure. Not that Trigvi isn't, but we have the man himself this morning. So happy and honored to welcome him in. Rick Wilson, the co-founder of the Lincoln Project, is joining us this morning for this hour to talk politics and whatever else we come up with this morning. Rick, thank you so very much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd.
It's you look at your resume, whether it's online or other places. I'm just going to read a couple of these things for people who might not be aware of you or have heard about you before. Rick has written two best-selling New York Times bestsellers. The first, including Everything Trump Touches Dies, a great book. Then the other one was Running Against the Devil, a plot to save America from Trump and Democrats from themselves. He's been on CNN, MSNBC, National Public Radio, been on Real Time with Bill Maher. He's a frequent guest there, and you may have read him as his writings across social media, and also in the Washington Post, Politico, Rolling Stone, and The Hill, amongst others. So an impressive resume. For me, Rick, personally, you're somebody I can totally relate to, because like me, you were a longtime member of the Republican Party, much more successful than I was in politics, but you left. And you just said, I can't do this anymore. And to me, that's your most impressive resume or credential on your resume.
Well, thank you for that, Todd. I appreciate it. And look, I made a decision that a lot of people made. I may have had a little higher like public profile with the press or what have you. But, you know, when I saw the direction he was going to take the party in 2015, I became one of the first people in the consulting world, who said, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to play this game.
And
I'm not going to put myself and my kids and my country in a position where I'm going to be a party to somebody who is fundamentally not a conservative, fundamentally not even a Republican, and who told us from the very start what he was going to do. He was going to govern in an autocratic way. He was going to pursue a series of initiatives and programs that were meant to enrich him, that were meant to enrich the people around him, like Jared Kushner, that were meant to empower people like Steve Bannon, and Roger Stone. And my response was just, no, I'm not going to do it. And it, the ironic thing, Todd, I think that, you know, that I've found in this whole process over the last 7 years is it turned out that it was, you know, I was supposed to be like one of this tribe of cynical consultants who, you know, would do whatever, you know, the old, you know, Al Davis line, just win, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be a bunch of the cynical consultants who really actually believed that the party stood for limited government, personal responsibility, individual liberty, the rule of law, the Constitution, all these things that were thrown out the window in a hot minute when owning the libs became the sole defining quality of the Trump Republican Party.
I think you're being a little bit modest in terms of your capabilities. For people who might not know, and politics is a weird, it's a business, it's a game, it gets in your blood, you can't get it out. It's like the mafia. Once you think you're getting out, they pull you back in.
And, or herpes.
Herpes, right? But I'm not sure there's any medication. I think we'll Trigvy shared the comment from the late great John McCain, who I guess told him one time, the only remedy for presidential ambition is embalming fluid. So I thought that was pretty good. But I mean, Rick was one of those guys in the Republican Party, one of the handful, or maybe top 10 in the country. And I'll be crude about this. You were a nut cutter. I mean, you just cut people's political nuts off and you didn't care because it was about winning. And you were really, really good at that. And I'm sure you did very well financially. And to put all that aside and say, you know what, my country is more important than that, that speaks a lot to me.
Oh, believe me, my ex had a lot to say about the fact that I burned down an incredibly successful business. I had a tremendously successful practice. Both in the political space and in the advertising and PR space. And man, try being a Republican who runs up against Donald Trump in 15 and you could always go back in. Mm. But by the time I wrote the book, the first book, it was like, even my corporate clients were like, hey dude, we love you, but, these people will destroy us if we keep you on board. And it was, you know what, look, at the end of the day, I have had a tremendous successful career. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the money wasn't really what was going to make me happy. And yeah, believe me, I miss being in that world in some ways, but you know, the funny thing was once I started going up against Trump and even in 15, I started sleeping. Like I spent years like one eye open, 4 hours a night. What is going wrong? What's going to burn down? What am I going to need to do? And I just started feeling better about myself and my life and everything else. And yeah, it was hard. The death threats, the bull, you know, you constantly get called every name in the book by these crazy people. But you know, there is a certain comfort in a morally correct decision. And, you know, as a stoic, you have to kind of accept the downsides of that. You can't change what the downsides are, but you can work through those sort of things. And look, again, I've written 2 New York Times bestsellers. I've sold rights to things. I'm fine.
You're doing okay.
I'm not missing the mortgage. Okay.
Go ahead.
But I mean, the practice of being a political consultant, it's a very good business.
Absolutely. Take us back, if you would, please, because you have an interesting story. Tell people a little bit how you got involved at first in politics and the Republican Party, and then eventually what the straw was that broke your political back to make you leave.
Well, yeah, I mean, my parents were kind of, you know, they were kind of old school yellow dog Florida Democrats. When my mom was 9 months pregnant with me in 1963, she was one of the young Democrats who held this big reception for John F. Kennedy at Al Lang Stadium in Tampa, Florida. She goes in the hospital on November 21st. 24 hours later, John F. Kennedy is shot.
Wow.
So that's sort of where I started.
that's quite a beginning.
And I mean, my first like Republican political memory is my great uncle, was a big Republican fundraiser. And I was about 14 years old. And he said, well, come over to the house in Winter Haven because I'm having the governor of California, Ronald Reagan, out.
Wow.
This is before the 1980 race.
Sure.
And this is 77, I guess. I'm old. I'm 59.
I'm 53, not too far behind.
And that was sort of my first exposure to like watching a campaign in operation. Mm. Like I was fascinated by the advance people and all the things that were happening. Got out, went to college, and I was going to go be a young Cold Warrior. And, you know, I was, studying politics and philosophy and Soviet studies. And, you know, while I was deciding what I was going to do after when I was going to go to grad school and do more language stuff, my friend of mine said, hey, you ought to go and meet these guys who are working for Connie Mack. They're good guys. And Connie Mack was then a House member and running for U.S. Senate, a long shot race, went on board the Mack campaign. And about halfway through that campaign, the Bush people said, you're going to come work for us. And so I was a field director for HW in Florida in 1988. Mm-hmm. So put off going to language school and doing more Russian, went into the government, as an appointee, went into the transition, and then over to the Department of Defense, worked for this guy named Dick Cheney. You may have heard of him.
Yeah, we heard of it. Yep.
He was Secretary of Defense back then. We had the Cold War ending. We had that first little spat in Iraq.
Yes.
And it was a really amazing experience for a young guy because I went out there and I was all over the place. And I was thrown in the deep end of the pool all the time. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot about how government worked, how international politics worked, how human beings worked.
Mm-hmm.
Because as Bill Crow once told Dick Cheney, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, he said, I want you to imagine the worst thing you can think of, rape, murder, incest, cannibalism, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And it's happening somewhere in the Defense Department right now. And so, I spent four amazing years working on big issues and some really, really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. At a level of responsibility for a guy in his 20s, you should never put me in that deep water. But anyway, Bill Clinton wins. I go back to Florida. My then wife's pregnant out to yay with our first child. Get back into politics very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Spend a year in the Florida legislature working as a chief of staff. Went out, joined a Republican media firm led by Bob and Adam Goodman. Bob Goodman's one of these guys who founded TV advertising in this country, mm-hmm. essentially for politics. He goes back to like Eisenhower era, Spiro Agnew, wow. era, way, way back. I mean, mm-hmm. amazing character. His son, Adam, good friend, a very creative guy. And in 1996... just because we're ambitious young, we go up to New York and pitch Rudy Giuliani for his reelection campaign. And it's everybody, like all the big names are coming in there to pitch this work. And we just decided we're going to be the biggest in the room because
mm-hmm.
Sorry.
It's hard because we're all used to podcasts, then we go on broadcast radio.
Right.
Tricky and I do the same thing.
No, we
do the same thing. You're fine.
We're gonna be the biggest swing and you know what's in the room.
Yep.
We're not gonna be modest. We're not gonna pretend that, this is anything but a hard pitch. And we get the work.
Right.
It's crazy.
Wow.
Right. Made my career, honestly. Made about 120 ads for that campaign. Then in 1998, we go out, we do 35 races across the country. We win 33 of them. We're like just flaming hot. I go back to New York because he says, come back to New York. Mm-hmm. I go inside City Hall for a year and a half, a senior advisor to the mayor, go out to run the aborted campaign against Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And Rudy quits. I go work for the Republicans and for W. Start my own practice after having left Adam and Bob, and was very successful. I was in the super PAC space for a lot of the work, which was great. I did work in 38 states for 160 different ad sets for different campaigns for different super PACs. Had a great time, man. It was great. And then, of course, somehow I grew a conscience in 2015. and yes, I was a guy who went out. I was the guy you called mm-hmm. when things were very dark and very bad. And you needed somebody who would come in and make it darker and worse. Mm-hmm. And but only changing that over to the other side. I was an infamous negative ad guy.
Was Lee Atwater did you look up to him? Did you look at his work and be like, I want to do that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, look, he ran the 1988 campaign. And of course, guys like me, I'm in my 20s. I'm suddenly in Republican politics. And this guy is a baller. I mean, he's tough as nails, smart as a whip, and sharp as a knife. And you loved it. I mean, people can go back on it now and pick at it. But the guy was really an amazing figure.
Rick Wilson's our guest. He is the co-founder of the Lincoln Project. He is not a lib, obviously. He has quite a history. We'll find out why he left the Republican Party and his takes on current events after this. Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show. It is 8:33 on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're glad to have you along with us on this midday. Our guest this morning, this hour, the Rick Wilson. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's not just Rick Wilson. He has a the. It's the Rick Wilson on Twitter. Not an imposter, the real guy, as a matter of fact. He is the co-founder of the Lincoln Project, a New York Times bestselling author, appeared on several television programs and newspapers across the country for his work in taking on the Republican Party after spending a life in it. Just to button that up a little bit, Rick, so we established that you were legit, you're the real deal. Tell us tell people what you told me off the air about Karl Rove.
You know, I was the kind of guy that Rove had a stable of people that were hard. He didn't want to necessarily introduce them to everybody at the same time, but you know, I was one of those guys that you knew that once I came on the campaign, I was going to get set on fire.
Right.
Oh God, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting we're on the radio, not my podcast. Stuff was going to get set on fire.
Right.
And, you know, look, I have been around this. I have been around the Republican world. I mean, my bona fides in the Republican politics, you know, were as established as anybody's. Mm. And I'd been in the room on big and consequential decisions for a lot of different things. And when I decided that I wasn't going to be around Donald Trump's mania and evil, there were a lot of people in the Republican Party who would call me and say, yeah, keep at it, man. We got to get rid of this guy. Mm. And I knew that I was going to be a bullet sponge for a lot of this stuff.
Yep.
Because, you know, I was established. I didn't really, I wasn't really worried about, you know, making my bones. A lot of people who were just a little bit younger were like, oh yeah, but just in case, I got to be careful.
Right.
And a lot of them in the other campaigns were like, yeah, man, this is going to be great. And once Jeb takes out Trump, then Marco will scoot in. And once Marco takes out Jeb, Ted will all this gyration and all this fantasy. For whatever reason, I saw with absolute terrible clarity what Trump would do to the country and the party. And I knew it. I knew it in my gut from the very start. Yeah. And once you take yourself out of being the consultant to someone else, and once you take yourself out of being the guy who's making an ad or writing a speech or coming up with a strategic approach to something, and you decide you're going to only have one client, and that client really is the country and the future, it really reframes your life a lot. And again, look, I have to say, for all the stuff I've been through, for all the things that, you know, all the death threats and the threats against my kids and the stalking of my kids that went on after all this stuff, physically and digitally.
Incredible.
And all the, you know, randos showing up at my house, beating on my doors in the middle of the night. You know, a couple of people almost got themselves shot. One guy was banging on the back porch door of my house at 5 a.m.
Good gosh.
And, you know, these crazy people.
Did you have to hire
all?
Go ahead.
I don't really talk about it, but I have security in depth. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And once I got to the point where I let all that stuff in, I'm sort of a practicing stoic at this point in my life. Ooh. Those things are going to happen. I could die tomorrow. when your number's up, your number's up. When the day is that, when the day is here, the day is here. Mm-hmm. You don't want it, but if you, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Do your best work every day. And so, you know, when we saw what was happening, every Republican consultant, all these elected officials that I was friends with or that I had elected or I had counseled in some way or I had given advice to in various crises in their campaigns or their lives, because I was pretty good at that stuff. One by one, almost every one of them fell back and said, yeah, you know what? And it was kind of an arc. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, it was, yeah, you know, I hate him. He's the nominee. Mitch and Paul Ryan will take care of him. Mm-hmm. They'll get him under control. They'll put a shock collar on him. How bad can it be? Mm-hmm. And then in 17, it was, oh, man, it's terrible.
All right.
And I really hope he doesn't run again. And, you know, you should see these people at my town hall. Because they're crazy. I've written about it. A former member of Congress, friend of mine, did a town hall in January 17 and was asked in the town hall by a guy, red hat guy, are you going to be with Mr. Trump 100% of the time?
Jeez.
And he said, well, I hope so. I've endorsed him. I want to support him. I'm a Republican. I hope we can work together on things that make life better here in state X. And he goes, but if Trump is wrong on something, I'm going to be with you, the people of my district. And the room goes down about 100 degrees below zero. Mm-hmm. And the angry murmuring begins. And guy pops back up. No, I said, are you going to be with him 100% of the time? And then every other red hat in the audience is on this same track, right? Mm-hmm. He gets off the stage and his phone's blowing up like 911 calls from his wife because in the space of a 90-minute town hall, okay, they found his wife's Facebook page, her work Facebook page, their kid's high school, and the death threats and the insanity is so immediate. The insanity is so in depth that it terrified them. And the threat of physical violence in 17 and 18 is what broke the Republican Party. Every single one of them, whether they admit it or not, at that point, looked out at the Republican base and said, oh, God, these people will kill us. Mm-hmm. They are violent. They are insane. They believe insane things. When Trump tells them something that is insane, they accept it as a pure fact. And so by the time 2020 starts to roll around, every one of the good guy Republicans, except, you know, a handful in the House. By the time 2020 rolled around, you had 8 people left who had voted to, you know, who were not supportive of Trump in the House.
Right.
Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, a couple of others. And by that point, it was, well, look, the world has changed. We have to accept these people for who they are. The base wants what the base wants. And we cannot defy the base. You could defy the base. You really could. The essence of leadership in a republic, which Republicans never tire of saying, we don't live in a democracy, we live in a republic. In a republic, your role as an elected leader, elected to office under democratic small d principles, is to lead. It is not to mindlessly say, oh, well, the mob wants what the mob wants, so let's give the mob what they want. Mm. That's not how it's supposed to work. And I don't know how long I was beating my head against the wall with these Republican members saying, guys, liberate yourselves from this. Be brave. Courage is the highest virtue. Get out of the pit. You don't have to be this way. This doesn't have to be this way. And with a very few exceptions, it does for them have to be this way. The MAGA element of the GOP is not conservative. It is hyper-nationalist, hyper-populist. It is racially driven by a racial animus. And it's not the party any of us grew up with. It's not Ronald Reagan's party. It's not George H.W. Bush's party. It's not George W.'s party. Mm-hmm. It's not Mitt Romney's party or John McCain's party or anybody else's. And the Republican Party has lost seats across the country at every level. Okay? They've lost power. power in the country at the local level, at the state level. The number of I think it was 655 seats that were lost under Trump at state House, state Senate, congressional, statewide Republican offices. But that doesn't matter anymore because they're not in the business of electoral persuasion. They're in the business of intimidation, the raw exercise of power. And the most fundamental reason I departed from Trumpism, one of the members of Conservative Inc., I call it, one time accused me of, oh, you don't like Trump because of his aesthetics. I'm like, dude, I'm a guy who's been in a bar fight, okay? I'm not some delicate flower. I'm not here drinking out of the finest, most delicate teacup.
Right.
I like a good fight. I like some fight in the dog, as we say down south. But as a guy who is informed by both conservative and classically liberal and libertarian principles, not the Libertarian Party because I've had sex, but libertarian principles, the exercise of the power of the state was inevitable under Donald Trump. And the MAGA movement has become incredibly enamored with the exercise of state power. Look at Ron DeSantis in Florida. He's using executive orders. He's ramming stuff through administratively. He's using the entire power of the state to intimidate voters, to intimidate state universities, to intimidate private companies, to force them into his ideological and social conservative preferences, using, as I said, the raw power of government. I have always believed, as an actual conservative and a guy who studied communism growing up in college, that the exercise of state power by people who are unaccountable, especially in populist systems, almost inevitably leads to something very dark and very bad and very wrong. And you can see that transformation throughout 2020 as Trump began to be more and more devoted to the idea that the whole only I can fix it thing, it was a through line, but more and more devoted to the idea of using the power of the government to screw his political enemies. Now, we didn't find this out until after the January 6th hearings, but in November of 2020, after the Lincoln Project had whipped Donald Trump like a rented mule for a year, and played a meaningful role in his defeat. And by the way, if people don't think that's the case, ask Donald Trump or any of his staff. Just say the Lincoln Project. Wake him up. He'll scream if you wake him up out of a deep sleep saying Lincoln Project's in the house. But we discovered that the Trump White House went to Bill Barr and said, hey, you need to investigate Rick Wilson and Reed Galen and Stu Stevens at the Lincoln Project. They wanted to use the White House to tell the Attorney General of the U.S. to go out and investigate and attack a super PAC made up of former Republicans. Why? Not because we committed a crime or done something wrong, but because we had hurt Donald Trump's feelings by running ads that made his little fifis hurt. And this is that exercise of state power is more and more central to the entire definition of the Republican Party. And if you believe that state power should be exercised unilaterally by a single strong man, you are not a believer in the American Republic. You are not a believer in a constitutional democracy. You are an authoritarian fanboy. You are someone who would be very comfortable, and some of them would be, by the way, some of them would be very comfortable under a Pinochet or a Castro or a Maduro or a Putin. And don't even start me on the Putin fanboy club in the Republican Party today. Because I grew up as a young Cold Warrior, we didn't put up with any of this communist twaddle.
Right, exactly. I mean, but you would describe it. I mean, this is fascism. This is authoritarianism. And I've got about a minute and a half left before the next break. But you've said this. It's been a controversial thing. You've said, burn it down. We have to burn it down, figuratively, figuratively speaking, of course.
I desperately want a center-right party in this country. I am not a progressive. I am not a liberal. I am a center-right guy. I believe in the power of individual liberty. I believe in free markets. I believe in a government that is smaller, smarter, better, and more restrained in what it does. I believe that the Constitution is the operating system of the United States of America. I believe the rule of law is sacred. But all those things are being cast aside. There is not a party in this country that believes in those things. And yes, I know I may be a one of the last priests of a dying religion, but the folks that think that state power being untrammeled and uncontrolled is a good thing, wait until there's a Democrat who takes the MAGA approach to power.
Hold that thought, Rick. Back with more after this. You're listening to the Todd Oddball Show. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Oddball Show. It is now 8:50 on this Wednesday morning, the 15th of February, 2023. Glad to have you along with us on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can listen to all these segments by listening to our podcast at civicmedia.us or just simply saying, hey, Siri, or whatever you're listening to, play Todd Oddball's podcast. And by technology, it all happens. You can also listen to Rick Wilson. He has a podcast as well. And you can also find him at The Lincoln Project, where he is the co-founder, talking with him this hour. He is a best-selling author of 2 New York Times best-selling books on multiple platforms, on TV, and in writing as well. I wanted to let you go. I didn't interrupt you a lot in the last segment, Rick, because I think I never heard you talk at that great a length, unless you listen to a podcast, but at least on broadcast, radio, or television, and tell that background, and tell that story, because I think there are people like I used to work for, former State Senator Dale Schultz from Southwest Wisconsin, a moderate Republican.
Oh, sure.
Scott Klug, who I worked for in Congress in the 90s, a pro-choice Republican, one of the few Republicans to vote for Clinton's assault weapons ban in 1994. And these people, and Steve Gunderson, former member of Congress as well, Tommy Thompson, of course, our former governor and Secretary of Health and Human Services under W., these people all keep saying, look, I'm not going to say I'm not a Republican. I'm still a Republican. The Republican Party left me. They have this, and I respect them. And I think I just couldn't do it. I sat in a caucus where people were, you know, talking about taking away constitutional rights to vote for minorities and college kids, and I said, that's it. For me, that, you know, I was out of there at that point. And so I simply couldn't do it. But I respect people who still want to, you know, be there and change it. But you just laid out in the last segment, and people, if you didn't hear it, go back and listen on the podcast version. You laid out why the Republican Party as it is beyond saving. You truly do have to burn it down and start over.
Every single member of the House caucus, every single one of them, is unwilling to go out in public and say, we live in a democracy because Donald Trump lost and Joe Biden won the presidency. They are terrified of telling the truth. The ones that are still sane people, they have to hide it. They have to pretend to be otherwise. Listen, let me give you an example. Elise Stefanik has become this like MAGA rock star queen. She's totally faking it. She's lying. It's the fake orgasm of politics. It's unconvincing, loud, but unconvincing. But the majority of the Republican caucus in the House, and I mean by like 3/4 of them, are now people who believe in things like QAnon. They think the Twitter files are some sort of magic Rosetta Stone to the secret archives of power. They believe that the Chinese spy balloons are pushing out 5G chemicals into the atmosphere. All this craziness has become what they really are. And so fewer and fewer of them can go out into the real world and have actual conversations with real people outside of that Republican bubble on Fox and Facebook and conservative talk radio. You know, so when the Roman Empire collapsed, okay, I know this is kind of a weird offshoot. When the Roman Empire collapsed, starting in the second, third, and fourth century, all the, you know, at that point, Latin was the language of almost everyone throughout Europe, of the elites, of people in power and government. But as Rome collapsed, the language drifted away. And so you get these languages that are influenced by Latin, you know, Spanish and Italian and French. But the linguistic drift made it harder and harder for people outside of Rome itself to understand the language anymore. Mm. This is a bubble now inside the Republican world where they don't believe things that the rest of America believes. They believe that they are at war with everyone else. They believe that this catalog of imaginary demons in their head is real. And they believe things that they, that 25 years ago, if you'd said this in a Republican, you know, a caucus meeting in a state legislature, people would have said, get out of here, go get mental health care. But, you know, I saw some polling the other day, 70% of Republicans believe the election was stolen from Donald Trump. 64% of Republicans believe a secret cabal runs the United States. So it's not a far jump from the QAnon insanity that we used to laugh at to having that define what the Republican Party is today. And it is striking. And we talked a little bit about this earlier, how much the Republicans have abandoned all the predicates that they claimed to once believe in. Limited government, individual responsibility, fiscal sanity, strong foreign policy. I mean, they have now become the party of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all those Republicans who put Marjorie Taylor Greene in the position of having the second most powerful person in the House of Representatives. She controls the agenda that Kevin McCarthy operates under every day. All those people were putting somebody who is a Putin fangirl, who hates Ukraine, who hates America, frankly, in charge of the agenda of the House of Representatives. That's madness.
It is.
That's madness. It's not a party. It's a cult.
I agree with you 100%. Got about two and a half minutes left. I want to get your quick take on 2024. Not so much Nikki Haley, but just in general. Biden came here. His first stop after the State of the Union address. Is Wisconsin ground zero again? And is Trump the likely nominee?
Trump is the almost certain nominee. I mean, Nikki Haley's going to be lucky to come in third place in South Carolina, honestly.
Right.
Between Trump, DeSantis, and Nikki Haley, she's going to come in third place. Watch. Just watch. Wisconsin will be ground zero again. It is a state that you know, we invested a lot of time at the Lincoln Project there last year because we look at it as a place where an investment now, a down payment now on democracy will pay dividends in 2024. Mm. We will be back again in Wisconsin in the 24 cycle. But the 2024 presidential primary is already going. It is already running hard. Trump is in. DeSantis is building a gigantic machine of his own. Nikki Haley is in. You will get the rest of the cats and dogs and the also-rans and the weirdos and the lunatics and everybody else. Mike Pence, Tim Scott, Mike Pompeo, Nikki, or Christine Noem, all the cats and dogs who are hoping for some weird miracle where Donald Trump gets eaten by wild dogs one day on his way to a debate and somehow they sneak in behind him.
Right.
It's all a fantasy. Mm. If Trump is alive and not in prison, he will be the nominee.
I agree 100%.
There's a lot of the boomlet for Ron DeSantis right now. But at the end of the day, I'm a Florida guy. I've watched DeSantis since he was a member of Congress. He's not, he lacks charisma. He's not a warm guy. He's not a friendly person. He's not someone you want to have a beer with. He is a weird dude. And I think we're going to see a lot of very ugly campaigning here in the next few months. And then it's going to escalate into probably the most brutal presidential campaign of our lifetimes. And I have been around a lot of them now. And I speak from experience. It's going to get loud and ugly and very, very messy.
30 seconds left. Is Joe Biden the nominee for the Democrats?
Absolutely.
So
again, if
so
he's alive, he's the nominee.
It's
everybody else needs to stop all these fantasies about everybody. You know, it's all just
I get it. Rick Wilson, founder of Lincoln Project. Wonderful to have you on. Thank you for your time. Hope to have you back soon. You're welcome on the show anytime. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thanks, man.
My pleasure. Have a great day. Stay with us.
You too.
We have hour number two after this on the Todd Allball Show. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network.